Call this meeting, post-council to order, March 31st, 2022. A couple of announcements. First, I guess you've all noticed that Wade Carpenter has not been with us for the last, well, this will be his second session. He was attending the International Association of Chiefs of Police in Dubai. He had a little personal problem. He had surgery, and he is recovering in Dubai. I understand. I talked to him this morning. He's going to be fine, and he will be back. So hopefully in our next post-council meeting, you'll see him sitting here, me over here. Excuse for today, obviously, is Wade Carpenter, also Troy Walker. He is apparently in a place where he does not have internet service, and Janetta Williams is also excused, or is she on? Then she would be excused. The first item on the agenda is the approval of the January 6th, 2022 minutes. Do I have a motion for approval?
Has anybody had an opportunity to read those? We have a motion to approve the January 6th, 2022 minutes by Chief Soap. Do we have a second? Second by John Crowley. Is there any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all of those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? That motion passes.
The next matter on the agenda is quarterly reports. And we'll have Lieutenant Moore and Lieutenant Newland.
So for the quarter of December 1st, 2021 to February 28th, 2022, investigations received 53 complaints, opened 35 cases, did not conduct any administrative hearings. We closed 4 cases with no action. We received 11 voluntary relinquishments. The first was for DUI, leaving the scene of a property damage accident and obstruction of justice. The second was possession of a controlled substance, bringing the controlled substance into a secure facility, and distribution of controlled substance. The third was wanton destroy of wildlife, obstruction of justice, and witness tampering. Fourth was enticing a minor. Fifth was sexual conduct on duty and lying under Garrity. Sixth was stalking. Seven was lying under Garrity, dishonest in violation of policy, sexual battery, sexual conduct on duty, and official misconduct. The eighth was sexual abuse of a minor. The ninth was possession of a controlled substance. The tenth was custodial sexual misconduct. And the 11th was felony DUI and possession of a firearm by an intoxicated person. We reviewed 250 basic training applications, 37 dispatcher applications, and 33 waiver and reactivation applications. We currently have 85 open cases, and 65 of those are active. For the year of 2021, January 1 to December 31st, we received 259 complaints. We opened 121 cases, conducted 11 administrative hearings. We closed 25 cases with no action. We received 36 voluntary relinquishments. We presented 53 cases to post-council. 13 of those were revocations, 36 were suspensions, 3 were letters of caution, and 1 was returned to post to be heard at a later meeting. We reviewed 893 peace officer applications, 111 waiver and reactivation applications, 124 dispatcher applications, totaling 1128. Do you have any questions? Thank you.
Afternoon. For the basic training side of things, in the quarter December 1, 2021 to February 28th of 2022, we finished session 361 SFO and LEO. We are currently holding a 362 SFO and LEO. We have started session 363 and 364 SFO. Right now we have we have almost 70 cadets in basic training right now. Actually, I think we're up to 80. Upcoming, we have 363 LEO. We have 43 enrolled in that one. 364 LEO is starting in April 25th. That's 40 enrolled. 365 has 42 enrolled, which starts May and goes through September, May 23rd to September 9th. And 366, we've got 18 enrolled so far. That starts in July 11th. Our dismissals have been mostly for PT and academic. In fact, 50% PT and 50% certification exams. In our legal blocks right now, we have seven block candidates in those blocks that are making up classes where they were unsuccessful in SFO. For our annual report, January 1 of 2021 to December 31st, 2021, Post held 8 basic training academy sessions. We had 246 individuals certified as LEOs, and this is in line with the last 3 years for the numbers. Including the satellite programs, we've certified in 2021 764 special functions officers, 364 correctional officers, and 511 law enforcement officers. The attrition rate at Post, and Post alone, not the satellites, is about 8.7 for 2021, roughly 1 out of 12. And as a comparison, that's actually lower than 2020, which was an average of 9.5%. We are anticipating adding a basic training block this year just for the demand. All of our basic training blocks have been very full with wait lists, so we are anticipating adding another class here in 2022, but we are not sure yet if that's going to be in the spring, early summer, or in the fall. Any questions?
Are you also reporting on the satellite academies?
I am, sir.
Please.
So, as we talked about last time, we have started our restarted our audit program for the satellite academies. We have started that process. We are right now examining the testing process for both defensive tactics and physical testing. We visited Weber State University, Salt Lake City Community College, Dixie State just last night for PT, and Salt Lake City Police Department. We've encountered very, very minor issues, nothing of note. I think a lot of that was due to our side not being as engaged with the satellites as we could have been. So nothing of note really for the academies, for the satellite academies. We do anticipate at this point visiting each of the academies at least once per calendar year to try and stay engaged with those academies. Any questions? Thank you.
I've just been informed that Janetta Williams is now online. So
we have more than a formant, which is great.
Okay, we have open meetings training. Mr. Jorgensen.
Good afternoon. this is the annual open meetings requirement. The head of the public body has to ensure that all members receive annual training on open meetings. This is a public body. It is created by statute, and all the meetings are open to the public. Our goal is to strive to be as transparent in the business as what we do as possible to build public confidence in post administration. One of the requirements for a public meeting is that it must have 24 hours notice posted on the public building, that physically where it's going to be on a public website, and posted on its own website. The public open meeting must have written minutes. Written minutes of an open meeting include the date, time, place of the meeting, the names of the members present and absence, and the substance of all matters proposed, discussed, and decided by the body, including summary comments made by the members, including the vote. If there is a closed meeting, then it must have a quorum present. The meeting is open until the point it becomes closed. The vote to close the meeting is a public vote. 2/3 of the members of the public body present at the open meeting must approve closing the meeting. If the majority of the members vote to close the public meeting, then everybody that is not part of the council is excused. Depending on the reason we close the meeting is whether or not there's going to be a record kept, audio record kept. The majority of the time this body closes a meeting is for the discussion of the health or mental fitness of an individual. In that case, the audio is shut off because there's not a record of that one. The chair will sign an affidavit that says that this is the only topic we discussed. The only vote that can be taken in a closed meeting is to reopen the meeting. So all your discussions and everything happen in a closed meeting. You can discuss the vote you're going to propose, so you can discuss it in the closed meeting, but the actual action must be taken in an open meeting. After the closed meeting is voted to be open, it's raised again. If there is further discussion to be had, or someone wants to go back into a closed meeting, there's no reason you cannot go back into a closed meeting to have that private discussion to not air the physical or mental issues of an individual being discussed. If there is another significant health risk, the chair can make a determination to close the meeting by essentially, well, not close the meeting, but to not have a physical present meeting. It can be held all online. The written determination has to describe the facts upon which the determination is based, the public health emergency, or some threat. For some reason, it can't happen. If there is no anchor location, the electronic meeting must allow a means for the public to, at a minimum, hear the meeting and to submit written comments by electronic means. Just because it is an open and public meeting does not mean that the chair does not have the power to exclude someone that is disturbing the meeting. The chair can ask for people to be excluded from the public meeting if they are disturbing the process. And there are criminal penalties to potentially violating the process, and my goal and all the other girls, the attorneys here, to make you not have that. On that, because it is an open and public meeting, we have to make a good record. So if you make a motion, it was helpful for the record if you support that motion adequately loud enough that it's picked up by the audio. Because we rely on the record to go back, and if the case is appealed or if there's a reconsideration, we need to be able to know who said what. And the chair does a really good job of acknowledging the name by vote. But if you could state your name and could state the reasons supporting or denying your motion, or if you want to speak on a motion, let's try not to talk across each other and then make a good record. That's all.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Jorgensen. We will now move to disciplinary cases. Mr. Hale. And I think the first one is Jose Berries. Is Mr. Berries or his counsel present?
Thank you, Vice Chair, members of the council. The first matter, Jose Berries. Mr. Berries was formerly employed by West Valley Police Department, resigned in April of 2021. The sustained allegation against him is for a BCI violation. A brief summary of the facts of that case are as follows. Mr. Berries was investigated by his agency for accessing a protected record using USAGIS in violation of department policy regarding accessing protected records. The investigation disclosed that on June 19th, 2020, Mr. Berries accessed the driver's license of a person who was in the hiring process with the department. Using his department-issued laptop, Mr. Berries saw the person's name and date of birth in the case details on a dispatch screen for a case that had been created for a pre-employment background check. Mr. Berries entered that information into USAGIS and viewed the person's driver's license, which is a protected record. He was not involved in the pre-employment investigation. As I mentioned, an internal investigation was conducted. Mr. Berries participated in the Garrity interview and admitted that he had accessed the protected record. He was working at the time as for a private company doing security work. He indicated that he had checked the calls that were being handled by on-duty officers when he saw a name in the case details for one of those calls. Mr. Berries thought that he recognized the name from a case that he had recently worked on and thought he may have some updated information to pass along to the assigned officer. He said that once he saw the driver's license, he realized it was not the person he had dealt with and could not provide any useful information and closed the tab with that information. The case details listed on the CAD screen indicated in four separate places that the case was for a pre-employment background check. The call was listed as being in Riverton City, not in West Valley, where he was located at the time of working when he accessed those records. The details also indicated that those officers would not have needed assistance. The name and date of birth of the party were listed. Criminal charges were filed, and Mr. Byers entered a guilty plea to the charge of knowingly or intentionally accessing or disseminating a CJIS division record as provided in Utah Code Annotated 5310108, which is a Class B misdemeanor, and that plea was to be held in abeyance for 6 months. In December of 2021, Mr. Byers participated in a Garrity interview with Post. During that interview, he indicated that he did not see the information about the case being a pre-employment background check and only saw the name, which he thought was familiar from a contact on a previous case. He said he often checked the dispatch screen to see if he could help on-duty officers somehow because there was a lot of downtime at his secondary assignment. During a second interview with Post, Mr. Byers clarified information about the screen that he saw, what had drawn his attention to the specific call and his responsibilities at the secondary employment. He reiterated that he did not know the person and did not realize the person who the person was until he realized that it was not the person he had been, that he had initially thought. In this case, Post is recommending a 6-month suspension, which is the baseline for a Category E offense. And I'll turn the time over. I understand Mr. Byers is here with his counsel, so I'll turn the time over to them.
Thank you, Mr. Hale.
Thank you, Andrew.
Would you state your name for the record, please,
I will.
Counsel?
My name is Jeremy Jones. I'm appearing on behalf of the FOP. I'm representing Jose Byers, who's also present with me. I appreciate Post Counsel's reading of the facts here. I think they were quite accurate. What I would ask the counsel to consider here is that this was a case of mistaken identity. My client thought he recognized the name. He wanted to help out. He was a backing officer on a call just a few weeks before. He thought that this was one of the involved persons on that call. As soon as he clicked in, he realized that was wrong. He clicked out. There's no allegation here that he used or disseminated the information inappropriately. And so I would ask the counsel to consider that as a mitigating circumstance. In addition, the counsel might have questions as to why my client entered a PIA on the criminal case. This charge was filed right in the middle of the COVID backlog. There was essentially no chance for my client to get a jury trial to have this issue heard. He felt like he was stuck in a catch-22 on this, and he made a decision that he thought was going to help him get through this process sooner rather than later. But as Post recounted, he's been very consistent both with his agency and with Post during the Garrity interviews that this was not a curiosity check. It was not somebody he recognized. He's not looking this person up because they're in pre-employment background. He thought it was somebody else, and he was trying to help a call that he'd been involved on just a few weeks prior. So the only other thing I'd ask the council to consider is that it's been fairly consistent in reducing this type of allegation down to a letter of caution. So I'm only going to highlight cases where Post made a recommendation for a suspension and this council reduced, but the most recent one was January 13th, 2021. Mr. Cabero, 3-month suspension was recommended, a letter of caution was issued. That individual approached and was contacted by someone who his wife had a stalking injunction against. While she was reporting the incident, he looked the person up in UCGIS. There's another one on September 9, 2020. Johansson, that's a recommended 3-month suspension. This body issued a letter of caution. There were aggravators in that case, being that there were multi occasions that access had been had, although the council noted that the individual did not share any of the information or disseminate the BCI information. That same council, September 9, 2020, Franco, Post recommended a 3-month suspension. The body issued a letter of caution. There were aggravators in the sense that there was dissemination of the information. There were no mitigators. Essentially, that individual was asked by a friend to run a license plate, and then she shared that information. And so that's just going back the last 2 years. I don't want to belabor the point, but with that being the case here, and given, I think, the factual mitigators at issue, I'd ask the council to consider issuing a letter of caution. Thank you.
Mr. Byers, do you want to make a statement to the council?
Yeah, I don't want to take too much of your time. I just I feel like the facts were stated pretty clearly. I just want to ask if you guys would consider a letter of caution in lieu of that suspension. Again, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions from the council?
Mr. Barros, how did the allegation of you doing this come to light to your agency? It just says an internal investigation was conducted.
I remember the answer to that. So the individual was running through pre-employment. I believe there was some sort of an audit, and they had seen that somebody had accessed this individual's records as part of the pre-employment screening. So that's how it came to light with the agency.
Any other questions from the council? Colonel Rapp?
I guess seeing it in here, this one's stapled together weird. I can't. Are you currently still employed with West Valley? When was the date of the separation on that?
End of April.
April 28th.
Pardon me? So, question. So, Mr. Hales, the cases that you cited, did any of those cases result in conviction, a criminal conviction?
That information was not in my records. I just audited what was conveyed to post counsel. I don't know if any of those cases were charged or what happened with those cases.
I have a question for Director Stevenson. So with the date of termination and when this occurred, if there was a six-month suspension, then it would basically be over today. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Okay.
Any other questions for Mr. Jones or Mr. Byers? Hearing none, do we have a motion?
I'll make one. Based on the fact that we would, the 6 months of suspension will have already been served at this time, and there's a criminal conviction in this case, I would make a recommendation we accept the recommended sanction from POST.
We have a motion from
Colonel Rappage to accept the POST recommendation. Is there a second?
Second.
Sheriff Sparks seconds that motion. Is there any discussion regarding that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Are there any opposed? Thank you, Mr. Jones, as far as.
Thank you.
Bailey Bradshaw. Is Mr. Bradshaw or his counsel present?
That's a Ms. Bradshaw,
Ms.
Vice
Bradshaw,
Chairman.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
I don't see anyone. Mr. Hale?
Yes, Ms. Bradshaw was not employed as a police officer. The sustained allegation against her is for willful falsification of information to receive certification and simple possession. Those are both criminal offenses. A brief summary of the facts are that Ms. Bradshaw had applied for entry into basic law enforcement training at POST. On the entrance application, she indicated that she had never used any illegal drugs. Bradshaw received training and became certified as a special functions officer. She later applied for employment in a law enforcement position and submitted a background packet as part of that process. In the background packet, Ms. Bradshaw indicated that she had used methamphetamine and LSD several times prior to entering basic law enforcement training. And based on POST's waiting period guidelines, the recency of that drug use would have delayed her entry into the training if she had included it on her application. During a Garrity interview with POST, Ms. Bradshaw acknowledged that she intentionally left the information of drug use off of her POST application. She indicated that she knew she should have included her drug use, but thought it would keep her from attending the training. In addition to using methamphetamine and LSD, Ms. Bradshaw also admitted to additional marijuana use. She said that in the summer of 2020, after completing POST training, she had traveled to a state where recreational use of marijuana is not a criminal offense and admitted to using marijuana while there. She said that she had traveled to Nevada and consumed THC gummies. In this case, POST is recommending a 3-year suspension, which is an upward deviation from the 2-year baseline, and that is in part because that she had used the additional marijuana gummies after receiving her training through POST.
Thank you, Mr. Hale. Are there any questions from the council for Mr. Hale?
Hearing none, do we have a motion?
Make a motion to accept the recommendation.
We have a motion from John Crowley to accept POST recommendation. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a second from Omega Stevens. Is there any discussion on that motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you, Mr. Hale. Next is Mark Cornaby. Mr. Cornaby or his counsel present? Mr. Hale?
Mr. Cornaby was formerly employed by Roosevelt City Police Department. He was terminated in December of 2020. The sustained allegation is possession of a controlled substance. A summary of the facts are as follows. Mark Cornaby, a canine officer with the Roosevelt City Police Department, was given a package of THC gummies by a friend who had found them in Colorado. Mr. Cornaby kept the THC gummies and included them with the other controlled substances that he used as training aids for his canine without authorization. He said that he had wanted to use the gummies to train his dog, but did not get permission to use the THC gummies for training purposes. He did not book them into evidence or file a report about how he had obtained them. The gummies were discovered by Mr. Cornaby's supervisor during an audit of his canine training aids. Mr. Cornaby was charged with possession of controlled substance and terminated from Roosevelt City. In November of 2021, he pled guilty to attempted possession of a controlled substance. He waived his right to a hearing and stipulated to the facts contained in the notice of agency action. And Post's recommendation in this case is a 2-year suspension, which is the baseline for that offense.
Thank you, Mr. Hale. Are there any questions from the council for Mr. Hale?
Council?
Yes. Nathan Evershad here for Mark Cornaby. Just so you all know, we are not disagreeing with the Post's recommendation. We're just asking you to follow it and not do an upper deviation from it. Just so you know, he's 46 years old, 16 years in law enforcement, as you know, and has been told you, Roosevelt City, Duchesne County, and other agencies. In this case, what happened was on May 23rd, these THC gummies were found in his trunk. He was written up internally. Then new personnel, including a new chief, a new city manager, came in, reopened the case. He was charged with possession of controlled substance. In December of 2020, we resolved the case with a plea in abeyance to a Class C misdemeanor in November, where he is going to be held in abeyance for a period of 12 months, $400 fine, no violations of the law, and then dismissed. Again, that's a little bit about him, and we would just ask that just follow the recommendation.
Are there any questions from Mr. Evershed from anyone on the council?
From this case.
The record should show that John Crowley is recusing himself in this matter. Any questions from anyone else on the council? Hearing none, I'll call for a motion.
I move to accept the Post. Move to accept the Post recommendation.
Thank you. We have a motion from Chair Sparks to accept the Post recommendation. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a second from Dr. Sween. Any discussion on that motion? Hearing none, we'll take a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion passes.
Thank you. Trevor Crane. Is Mr. Crane or his counsel present? I don't see anyone.
Doesn't appear so.
Mr. Hale?
Mr. Crane was formerly employed by Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office. He resigned in October of 2021. The sustained allegation against Mr. Crane was a driving under the influence of alcohol charge. A brief summary of the facts are that he was investigated by a local police agency for DUI. Coworkers reported observing Crane in the parking lot. He had poor balance and looked disheveled. A coworker saw Mr. Crane put his vehicle in reverse and begin to back up. The vehicle moved a few feet before Mr. Crane stopped. Local police were contacted. Mr. Crane performed the standard field sobriety test and was arrested for DUI. He submitted to a blood draw and the results were showed a BAC of 0.27. Mr. Crane's employer initiated an administrative investigation and sustained the violation of DUI, and Mr. Crane resigned in lieu of termination. He entered a guilty plea to the charge of DUI, a Class B misdemeanor. In March of 2022, he waived his right to a hearing before an ALJ and admitted as true the facts contained in the notice of agency action. In this case, Post is recommending a 1.5-year suspension, which is an upward deviation from the baseline 1-year suspension, and that is because of the high BAC content.
Thank you, Mr. Hale. Any questions from the council?
Colonel Ravitch.
Yes. So it looks like it was charged as a Class B misdemeanor. Correct me if I'm wrong, this would fall under the extreme DUI statutory category, which would actually be a Class A, wouldn't it? And it was charged as a Class B.
I'll defer to Sergeant Barnett on that.
The attorney spent an awesome answer to my question. It's actually so.
I know I'm not supposed to do that, so I'll let Mr. Hale do it.
No, I believe that is a possibility. Is that correct?
I think it predated
when the new law came into effect.
Thank you.
About 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Hale? Do we have a motion?
Motion to accept post recommendation.
We have a motion from Chief Swanson to accept post recommendation. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a second from Travis Knorr. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Are there any opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you. Nathan Dabb. Is Mr. Dabb or his counsel present?
Yes, they are.
Go ahead, Mr. Hale.
From conversations with Mr. Dabb's counsel and with Rich, my understanding is that counsel is going to make a request that the council close the meeting for this disciplinary action. So I'm going to turn the time over to his attorney.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel, J.C. Jensen on behalf of Nathan Dabb. The facts you have before you were stipulated to. If you had an opportunity to read those, I'm hoping someone will make a motion to close this session as we will be discussing my client's mental health and well-being.
Do I have a motion from anyone on the council to close the meeting to discuss those issues?
I'll make that motion to close the meeting to discuss my health issues.
I have a motion from Sheriff Curtis to close the meeting. Is there a second?
Second.
There's a second from Elena Stevens. All those in favor of closing the meeting for this discussion, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Thank you. And we will have everyone who is not a
member of the council. Council present will have to leave.
Vice Chairman, may the investigator be permitted to...
I believe he can be, yes. That's part of the case.
I don't care.
Absolutely. And that's how it's found out.
Okay, we are back. Sheriff Sparks. The record should show that Sheriff Sparks has recused himself from this matter. We have been in session. Do we have a motion for the council? Dr. Checkets.
Pending terms of the diversion agreement and meeting requirements of a new post applicant admission standard, as well as a fitness for duty evaluation.
Thank you. We have that motion from Dr. Checkets. Is there a second?
I will second it.
It was seconded by John Crowley. Is there any discussion to that motion? Hearing none, all of those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? The motion passes. Thank you, Mr. Depp. Adam Lee.
Is Mr. Lee or his counsel present?
Mr. Lee is not present. I'm in Nate Nelson's stead for Mr. Lee's counsel.
All right. Mr. Hale?
Yes. Mr. Lee's case, he was formerly employed by Ogden Police Department. He was terminated in November of 2020. The sustained allegation against Mr. Lee was for falsification of a government record. A summary of those facts are that the investigation at the agency level disclosed that Mr. Lee had falsified a report when documenting an assault involving two siblings. Mr. Lee falsely wrote in his report that he had asked the victim if she wanted the suspect to be criminally charged, but when he in fact never asked the victim. At multiple points in the body camera footage, the victim described being strangled. However, Mr. Lee did not document the strangulation and described in the report that the victim said she was not injured. An administrative investigation was conducted by Mr. Lee's agency. During a Garrity interview, he admitted to falsifying his report. He said that he did so because he did not want his supervisor to question how he had investigated the incident. He was subsequently terminated and refused to participate in a post-Garrity interview. In January of this year, a stipulated motion for default was signed by counsel. And in this case, Post is recommending a one-year suspension, which is the baseline penalty.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Hale from the council?
Counsel, once again, on this case, would you state your name for the record?
Yes, J.C. Jensen on behalf of Mr. Lee. Mr. Lee apologizes for not being able to be here. He's currently serving the military and stationed in Georgia. He apologizes for also having to have his name read on the record. He is hoping the council will accept the one-year suspension. In the event the council has any questions for him, he indicated he may be able to make himself available telephonically.
Thank you. Any questions for council from the council?
Mr. Chair, I have a question.
Sheriff Curtis.
Did Mr. Lee explain why he refused to cooperate with the investigators?
Not that I know, and I apologize again. I'm standing in Mr. Nelson's stead on this case, so I'm ignorant as to the facts.
Any other questions for counsel? I'll entertain a motion. Chief Self?
I make the motion that we follow post recommendation of a one-year suspension for Adam Lee.
We have a motion by Chief Self to adopt post recommendation. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
I have a second from Chief Swanson. Is there any discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all of those in favor of the motion to adopt post recommendation say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Motion passes.
Nicholas Surrett. Is Mr. Surrett or his counsel present? Mr. Hale?
Yes, Mr. Surrett was formerly employed by Bountiful Police Department, is currently, at least my understanding, is employed by Cedar City Police Department. The events at issue here today occurred while he was employed by Bountiful Police Department, and the sustained allegation was for sexual conduct on duty. A brief summary of those facts are that Mr. Surrett engaged in sexual conduct while on duty on two separate occasions during the months of June and July of 2019 with the dispatcher. Mr. Surrett's employer at the time was unaware of the sexual conduct on duty. Post was made aware of these incidents after an internal investigation on the dispatcher for a potential BCI violation that Post was separately investigating. During Post's Garrity interview with Mr. Surrett and with the dispatcher, both confirmed that they had engaged in sexual intercourse in the police department's gym, and oral sex was performed on him in his department-issued vehicle after his shift. No criminal or internal investigation was conducted. Mr. Surrett waived his right to a hearing and admitted as true the facts contained in the notice of agency action. In this case, Post is recommending a three-year suspension, which is the baseline for that offense.
Thank you, Mr. Hale. Are there any questions from the council for Mr. Hale? We also have a letter I see from Chief Darren Adams of Cedar City Police Department. I want to make certain that everybody has an opportunity to read that.
Yes, I'm sorry, I neglected to point that out.
And Chief Adams is present here as well today. Counsel?
Chairman Jones, on behalf of Nicholas Surrett, Post has read the facts accurately. I think the only thing that I ask the council to consider here is that my client was had a misapprehension about what on duty was. I know you hear that a lot. These allegations happened many years ago. As soon as he realized that he was on duty at the time, there was never any effort to conceal. He was very, very candid about what happened. He admitted it. He acknowledged that it was wrong. He's taken ownership of that at every stage here, and so I'd ask the council to acknowledge that. I think it's more important, though, that you hear from my client. He'd like to address you directly. Thank you.
Just want to start by saying I appreciate to be able to at least stand up here and defend myself a little bit to you. Even though there's not much to defend, you know, I know that my conduct was wrong. I knew it was wrong as a husband and a family man at the time. And that is why I took some pretty significant steps to correct that behavior. If you want to know a little bit about that, I'll tell you. But I did move, you know, across the state back to my hometown. I attended some counseling sessions with my wife to try to make amends for that. So I've been working on making amends for this already for a long time now. And I would like the council to consider that. I'm not making any excuses, just saying I've already been working pretty hard to make amends for this. And I love what I do. Being a police officer is extremely important to me, and it feels like that's where I belong. So I would ask the council, with everything in front of them, to consider a significant reduction from the recommended 3 years. And that's all I have, unless you would like to ask me something.
Any questions from the council for Mr. Surratt? Chief Swanson?
So this happened when you were in Bountiful, and then you left and went to Cedar City. And I read the case, but I'm a little confused. How did this come out?
So as I understand, the involved dispatcher was investigated for something entirely separate. They obtained a cell phone download from her cell phone. And I guess that I don't know what they were. I can't answer that, but there were text messages indicating that that behavior occurred.
Thank you. Any other questions? Chief Self?
I can answer that for you. This was an officer involved in my department, and we served the search warrant on the dispatcher's phone as well as his. And so once that was concluded, it was sent to Post, and then Bountiful did an investigation on their employee who was the dispatcher, and then that was sent to Post as well. So that's how it came about.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the council?
And I just have a question for Mr. Jorgensen. So does that make me, I might need to recuse myself from that, I assume. So
the record should indicate that she self is recusing from this matter.
I have a question procedurally. So the 3 year, would that be as of today, February of 2022, or of the date of the offense in 2019, as far as the 3 years?
Typically, because there was no break in service, it's the day they separate, so it would be the day of the decision today, if the council's consistent.
Okay, thank you.
To me, that would go back to August 11th, 2020, when he resigned.
You got employment directly after that resignation, correct?
Yes, sir.
So there wasn't a break in service, per se. Maybe a couple weeks from department to department?
Yeah, about that.
So the council could consider that a couple weeks as part of the sentence.
Any other questions
from the council? Any questions for his counsel? Jones. Hearing none, I will entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion. Staying consistent with how we've handled these cases in the past, I recommend we accept Post's recommendation for 3 year suspension.
We have a motion by Colonel Ravitch to accept Post's recommendation of a 3 year suspension. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a second from Sheriff Rigby. Any discussion on that motion? Hearing none, we will vote. All those in favor of the motion to suspend for 3 years, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you, Mr. Surratt. The next case, I'm certain I'm going to butcher this one. Tanelia, and I'm not even going to take a chance on the last.
I believe it's to and thank you.
I think you did as then bad
proceeded
as I did.
To butcher it myself.
Okay. And does anybody know how to pronounce it?
And is Mr. Tua Hatofa present?
Tua Hetaufa.
Taufa.
All right. Mr. Hale, go ahead.
the respondent, in this case, was employed by Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office. He was terminated in December of 2021. The sustained allegation against him was for a willful falsification of information to obtain certification. Mr. Tua Taufa was investigated by Post, and the investigation disclosed that he had submitted an application to Post to attend the Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office Corrections Academy. He did not document his employment or subsequent termination at a company called Hexcel on his Post application. In 2020, he attended an ethics class and completed a verification of application information form documenting that he did not need to add or supplement any information on his application. He completed basic training and became Post certified. In May of 21, he submitted an application to the Public Safety Bureau within the Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office, and as part of that application process, he completed a personal history questionnaire and an employment background. The background investigator discovered that he had been terminated from this company, Hexcel, in 2019, and discovered that he had failed to disclose his employment separately at a local business in his post application. No criminal charges were filed. During a Garrity interview, Mr. Tua Hitahofa admitted that he had worked at Hexcel and was terminated from that company. He indicated that he had never before been terminated from a job, and he was worried that it would prevent him from getting a law enforcement position, and admitted that he left that termination off of his application intentionally. Mr. Tua Taufa failed to respond to the notice of agency action, and an order of default was signed by the administrative law judge in February of 2022. In this case, Post is recommending a two-year suspension, which I believe is the baseline, but let me verify that. Yes, that is the baseline for the willful falsification.
Thank you, Mr. Hale. Are there any questions from the council for Mr. Hale?
Do we know any context as to why he was terminated?
Sorry to bar that. Yes. Sergeant Burnett raises a good point, which is my understanding is that the council can only consider.
Can you move to the mic, please?
Oh, sorry.
Mr. Hale.
That the council can only consider facts that were pled in the notice of agency action. And so I'm uncomfortable going beyond what's stated in the notice of agency action.
Any other questions from the council?
Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make the motion to accept post council recommendation.
Okay. A motion from Sheriff Curtis to accept post council recommendation. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Is there a second from Travis Knorr? Is there any discussion on that motion?
I just have some points to explore, which is I'd be curious why he was terminated, and if it has any bearing on his ability to be an officer. I understand if you can't discuss it.
And I'm not saying I can't discuss it. If the council directs us to go beyond that, I think Sergeant Timpson has some limited amount of information about that. But I want to emphasize that it was not part of what was pled and what was brought before the council. So we'd kind of be going above and beyond or outside of what the investigation findings were.
Yes, the council should only consider what was alleged by Post and what was found in the files. They should consider the story behind the story, unless it's going to come from the defendant or the respondent himself.
Okay.
It doesn't
matter. Can I ask one question?
Sheriff Curtis?
So the question would be, did he leave it off intentionally because it could have been involved in the crime?
Yeah.
Before we make it vote on it, maybe have them consider involved in the
And yes, and I think we could go as far as saying that the our understanding of the reason for the termination would not have been an independent basis for discipline. It was more of a performance based issue.
So it wouldn't have affected his application because rather than he left off.
Does that make sense? Does that sort of answer the question? The reason for termination would not have been a cause for independent post-action, disciplinary action.
I'll stick with my
Any other questions for counsel? Okay.
With that, I'll entertain a motion. Or do we have one?
We accept the recommendation.
We have a motion from Sheriff Curtis to accept post recommendation. Is there a second?
A second.
Travis Knorr seconded that. Any discussion? That's right. That's what we moved for. Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you, Mr. Hale. Lindsay Workman.
Is Lindsay Workman or their counsel present?
He is not present.
Thank you. Mr. Hale?
Ms. Workman was employed by Cache County Sheriff's Office. She resigned in July of 2021. The sustained allegation against Ms. Workman was for a DUI. The matter involved an incident where she was DUI while traveling to work in her personal vehicle. She was reported by another motorist for failing to operate the vehicle within her lane. Upon being stopped, the investigating law enforcement officer detected an odor of alcohol. She participated in standardized field sobriety tests, exhibited signs of impairment, and was subsequently arrested. She subsequently admitted to consuming and being under the influence of alcohol and submitted to a breath test, which indicated a breath alcohol content of 0.231. She was cited for unsafe lane travel and DUI and released. She later pled no contest to those charges. She did not participate in a Garrity interview with her agency and instead resigned. She did participate in a Garrity interview with Post and admitted to consuming 3 or 4 alcoholic drinks several hours before she drove. She waived her right to a hearing before an ALJ and stipulated to the facts in the notice of agency action. And in this case, Post is recommending a 1.5-year suspension, which is an upward deviation, again, based on the high BAC level.
Thank you, Mr. Hale. Any questions for Mr. Hale from the council? Council?
Thank you. Nathan Evershed for Lindsay Workman, who can't be here because of work issues. My request, just to kind of get to the punchline, is we're just asking for a deviation downward. Once you see exactly what she's been able to do to address this. Obviously, the BAC is high. I just wanted you to know a little bit about her. 38 years old, 11 years with the Cache County Sheriff's Office, had a great career there. What she was dealing with at the time was a divorce and child custody issues, has two children under her care, 13 and 15 years old, as a single mom, dealing with PTSD issues as well, and she used alcohol to cope. This event occurs, she resigns later. But I just want you to know that as soon as she could get an inpatient treatment bed, she got that for 30 days at Brighton Recovery, and then she did the aftercare. She then, after that, she went to Bear River Mental Health and Substance Abuse, and she was there seeing a counselor. Even though the court treatment request had been terminated, she satisfied that, she continues with that. She continues in treatment, she's doing aftercare, and she's doing all of this voluntarily. She has maintained complete sobriety for the last 6 months. She's committed to maintain her sobriety. She's feeling better, and she knows that she cannot use alcohol to cope. She loves law enforcement, and she would like to return to law enforcement to do a good job. But that gives you a little bit more of the context. So we understand why POST is making the recommendation. It's making, obviously, 0.23 is a pretty high BAC. But what our request would be is that when you understand everything she's done to make this right in her life, to maybe deviate back to the baseline of 1 year. And otherwise, I'd submit.
Thank you. Any questions for counsel?
Was unwilling to complete all of the SFSTs as requested.
Yes, actually. She had an injury to her leg, and she just said, this is not going to work. She I believe, is a knee problem. She was willing to do everything. She was willing to do horizontal gaze nystagmus. She was willing to go and blow. She wasn't, disputing anything. It just for her own personal physical issues, she knew she could not do the one-leg stand or the walking turn.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions from council? Does anyone have a motion?
Regarding Lindsay Workman. Motion to accept post-recommendation.
Second. We have a motion from John Crowley to accept post-recommendation. Is there a second?
Second.
There's a second from Melina Stevens. Is there any discussion regarding that motion? All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Any opposed? That passes. Thank you.
Piper Palmer. Is Piper Palmer or her counsel present?
Counsel's present. She's not.
Thank you. Mr. Hale.
Counsel, this is a little bit of an unusual situation. The counsel may recall that Ms. Palmer's case was considered by the counsel back in January previously. The sustained allegations that were brought before the counsel at that time were charges of intoxication and disorderly conduct. And at the time, post-recommendation was a one-year suspension, which was an upward deviation from the three-month baseline. And the reason for that was because of there was two separate incidents that were involved. After some discussion, one of the council members made a motion to make an upward deviation further to a revocation, have her license revoked. There was a vote, and that was the decision of the council. Following that, council for Ms. Palmer filed a timely motion for reconsideration under 63G4302, Utah Code Annotated 63G4302, and I believe that someone has kindly provided a copy of that statute to each of the council members. This raised some, and let me just... Under Section 402, and this is in the Utah Administrative Procedure Act, subsection 3A indicates that the agency head or a person designated for that purpose shall issue a written order granting the request or denying the request, and that's a request for reconsideration, which was filed by Ms. Palmer's counsel. The question is, for purposes of post-counsel, who would make that decision of whether to grant or deny the request for a reconsideration hearing under 63G4103, which is the definition section that applies. Agency includes a board, commission, department, officer, council, committee, bureau, or other administrative unit. And so the post council, by my reading and by post understanding, would be an agency. The question, however, becomes who would be the agency head. It would, you know, or I think in ordinary terms you would consider that to be the chairman. However, in discussions with the council's attorney, Mr. Jorgensen, there was a sense that no individual member of the council, including the chair, could make a decision on their own that would then be binding on the entire council. And so there was some internal discussion about implementing the statute and under these circumstances where what is being asked to, where the council is being asked to reconsider one of its sanctions decisions, its disciplinary decisions, as opposed to maybe a more common situation where the officer or the respondent would be asking the administrative law judge to reconsider an adjudication finding. And so I think Mr. Director Stevenson has set on the agenda a discussion on that point as how to deal with that issue going forward in the event that it comes up again. For purposes of Ms. Palmer's case, Director Stevenson made the decision that he would act in that capacity as the agency head or person designated for that purpose, and he, in this case, granted Ms. Palmer's request for reconsideration. And so that brings it back to the council to reconsider the revocation decision, if the council will entertain that reconsideration.
What are you suggesting, Mr. Hale, that the council sort of rubber stamp what Director Stevenson has done? Why?
Well, because of the uncertainty in the procedure, And in order to give to meet the deadline to either approve or deny the request, we had 20 days under the rule to either approve or deny Ms. Palmer's request. As the agency head for post, Director Stevenson elected to put this on the post calendar for today, along with a follow-up discussion again of how to deal with that in the future. And I'll let Mr. Jorgensen chime in here, but for in our discussions, my understanding is that it would take the entire post council brought together in order to approve or deny a request for reconsideration, which was apparently it wasn't practical. And so we've got it on the calendar, on the agenda for today. But I suppose there's two ways we could deal with that. The council could either act on Ms. Palmer's motion for reconsideration at the director's request, or another way of dealing with it would be to have the discussion initially as to how to deal with this procedurally, and then someone perhaps could make a motion on how to proceed with Ms. Palmer's request pursuant to whatever the council decides on the bigger issue. Director?
So lack of a process, this is very unique. I've never had this request before. And so the statute is pretty vague. We'll have a discussion about the process, but we don't have one in place, and that's why it's being presented now. It's up to the council what they do with it, but it put me in a situation where, because it is in statute, it's something that we have to address now. And moving forward, we'll have a formal process. So that is why I was compelled to bring it before the body.
Mr. Jorgensen, did you want to say something?
My advice is that the director, as the director of post, has ordered this reconsideration be heard by the council. It's an interesting interplay in statute between the director and council, where the director is appointed upon recommendation of the council. So you appoint him, but then you advise him. And so there is kind of the interplay between who is superior to who on that issue. But I think that based upon the administrative reconsideration statute that says the agency head shall do it, and he is the head of the division, that his order is correct, and that I advise the post to take up the reconsideration. Post council to take up reconsideration.
So, for example, if we do grant the reconsideration
and we consider it today, have we set a standard going forward that we would have to agree to? Or can we now set standards taking that away from the director or having him involved, let's say, with a body of people who will consider those?
If there are not procedures in place by the agency for reconsideration, then it falls to a certain default kind of reconsideration in the statute. And that's what my understanding is, that's what Post acted on, was the default, because there was not.
Yes, there's a,
not to get too deep into the weeds, but there's two companion reconsideration statutes. Mm-hmm. One governs when there is an agency reconsideration process in place. One is sort of a fallback default when there is not, and that's what we're operating under, which is Section 302. But even under 302, an agency head, as defined in that statute, is the one that would make, or their designee would make the decision of whether to entertain a request for reconsideration or not. And agency is one of the definitions, or the council does meet the definition of an agency. The question, though, becomes, at least in conversations with Mr. Jorgensen, who would be considered the agency head that could make that decision, given that in this council's circumstance, no one member can make a decision. So I think when we move on to the discussion of how to move forward, Director Stevenson has some ideas and some proposals along those lines. But at this point, he's placed it on the calendar, and I it may need to be by motion that the council agrees to proceed with this particular case.
Well, my question is, do we set a precedent by going forward today of having Director Stevenson then grant those that we would have to live with in the future?
Well, it is on the agenda for consideration of how to what process to implement. So one proposal would be to have that discussion first and then follow that. And I would hate to create an inconvenience for Ms. Palmer. Her counsel's here today, and it may be that she has to come back at some further point or not.
Which is fine. more of an interview.
We're going to have Sam Clark. We're going to come in 3 months, as you can all come and do that at those
times. So maybe appropriate to consider the Director Stevenson's proposal on how to deal with this situation procedurally on future cases, and then circle back to Ms. Palmer's case.
Is there an argument, because without a process formalized, you consider this one, and then moving forward, now we have a formal process that this council determines fit. I'm not an attorney, but I don't think that establishes precedent.
I'm wondering if
legal opinion here, if we can do that in one motion. In other words, make a motion to accept the reconsideration that's been issued by Director Stevenson and develop a new process moving forward that will allow us to handle those. If we did that all in one motion, perhaps it won't create a standard that we have to live by, because it will anticipate that we'll make other rules.
My concern with what you're saying, Sheriff Sparks, is somebody is going to be standing at that podium and tell us that you did this in the past, you have to do it in the future. I'm not supposed to speak as the chair, but I'm going to anyway because I'm a lawyer. I would suggest that we move off this matter, have a discussion perhaps, and I talk to Director Stevenson, appoint a subcommittee that I'd be happy to be a member of, where we talk about the guidelines and procedures going forward under reconsideration, and then take up Ms. Piper's case at a later time. But does the council have any questions for Mr. Hale or Mr. Evershed? Well, we do have this matter on the calendar. Can we have, is there a motion?
So with your information, I'll make a motion that we table the matter of Piper Palmer at this time, and that we develop a process would allow them to bring this reconsideration back through the process that's established by the post council.
We have a motion by Sheriff Sparks to put off the consideration of this matter until a later time, pending a committee hopefully being put together from this group and guidelines and procedures being put in place. Is there a second to that motion? There is a second from Sheriff Rigby. Is there any discussion on that motion?
I have a question. So I'm assuming that we're looking at this in 3 months. So we will be considering the new rule and Ms. Palmer's case at the same time then? Or how will that work procedurally as we get the subcommittee together?
That's how it would work. If whatever this council decides to do, if there's a subcommittee, then we would come back to this body and then they would vote on accepting it or making changes.
Prior to hearing her case in the next
Prior meeting. To hearing her case. Correct.
Thank you.
Itself. Just for my curiosity, because I believe I'm the one that motioned for the revocation based on the pattern of behavior. This says 1 year suspension. Is that a new recommendation from Post, or was that the old recommendation?
That was the original recommendation.
Just to be clear, so if the council were to make a vote or a decision on the process issue at the next council meeting, we would need to put Ms. Palmer's case on for the following.
Either that, or we could move Ms. Palmer's case out 6 months into September.
Right.
And we would then look at procedures and policies going forward in 3 months from now. I don't think, we're hampered by anything other than our imagination.
Yep.
We could do it all in 3 months.
Could you do it in 6 months, Mr. Evershed?
I can do it here.
All right. Thank you.
If you guys go to Yellowstone, I'll go there for that. I'm not making a motion to go to Yellowstone. But, yeah, I just advocate for her. I think that she would like to have us be going back for 6 months and then 6 months.
We have a motion on the floor. Sheriff Sparks?
Just as a point of discussion, I want to make sure that doesn't interfere with any timelines that might be established for judicial review or other.
I don't think it does.
No, we've looked at this, and I believe that it's the triggering date for an appeal is told until there's a final order from the council.
That's my understanding under the statute. Yeah. All right, we do have that motion. Is there any further discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That passes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
now we're talking about reconsideration discussion. Director Stevenson.
I think with the subcommittee that's created, I don't know if the discussion is appropriate right now. I do have some ideas on how to establish a process by which would trigger a reconsideration by this body. And if we want to hold that to subcommittee, that is up to the chair. It's your prerogative.
I think we should probably hold up the subcommittee, but is there any discussion about putting together a subcommittee that would start looking at policies and procedures for reconsideration? And I have to say, I think we have to be a little bit careful because this could open Pandora's box for us very, very easily, where we could be looking forward at every single matter that we pick up if we're not careful.
And I think that's why it would be important to establish those guidelines as to what would trigger it.
I agree.
Subcommittees, or how's the process?
I think we've had a number of subcommittees on the council. We have one on substance abuse and some other matters. I'm not sure that there's anything on post-council that prohibits subcommittees. Is there direct?
We've had a handful of subcommittees to address certain issues that may not be appropriate in the larger group, and then we come back with a presentation or a proposal. And then you guys ultimately decide what that process will look like.
I think we had one recently on canine, and we had one on drugs.
We've had on use of force, canine, prescription drugs, drug guidelines.
Something that will probably have to be instituted through administrative rule.
I'm not sure.
That's a great question. I think that's one that would have to be looked at, Sheriff Sparks.
It may. I would say yes, because the statute is a bit vague as to who has the authority to do that. But there is no process of what would trigger a reconsideration. It's pretty, to me, it's just very vague.
I agree.
I think the statute, Section 302, provides some guidelines. Really, the question for the council, and in my view, is who's going to be the agency head that would be the gatekeeper for these types of reconsideration motions.
And the agency head, I think, could be more than one person. I think it could be a group of people.
The rule does provide for that. Agency head means an individual or body of individuals in whom the ultimate legal authority of the agency is vested by statute.
Exactly.
It's all right, Mr. Yaki. Chief Soap?
Not the persons, the agency that's involved that they work for. That's you, right? And it's 20 days?
Depends on how you read it. It could be me, it could be the chair, it could be the body.
But not the agency that they work for, so.
No.
Yeah.
Does anyone have a motion? For creation of the subcommittee.
I'll make the motion to authorize the director to create a subcommittee to explore an appropriate procedure for post-council to review requests for reconsideration.
I'll second that.
We have a motion from Colonel Ravitch to create a subcommittee to look at the question of reconsideration policies and procedures. A second from Sheriff Sparks. Is there any discussion? Having gone through this the last time I was sitting in this chair when Wade couldn't make it, perhaps we should select one now before we adjourn. I'm looking down at Sheriff Rigby. I happen to know that he has a JD in addition to that sheriff's badge, and I would think that that might be a good place to start for a committee chair. Would you accept that proposal?
I'd like to help, so.
Thank you. There's one. How many do you need, Director Stevenson?
Two more would be nice.
I would like to be on that committee.
Okay.
Is there a third?
The two attorneys we're going to accomplish? Our objective.
All we'll have is two different opinions.
I'd be happy to serve there as well.
Sheriff Sparks,
for free without doing it. And I think, Director Stevenson, you should be on that committee.
Okay.
All right.
That'll work. So moved. Do we need to vote on the subcommittee?
I think we probably should. Do we have a motion for the subcommittee?
I think we did from Colonel Rappich, and there was a second from Sheriff Sparks. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? It passes. Director Stevenson, you have your subcommittee.
Okay. I will send out some dates, and we'll start the process.
Drug policy subcommittee report, Director Stevenson.
Yes. And any subcommittee members, please chime in. I'm just going to summarize some of the notes and discussions that we had during that meeting. As a result of the subcommittee meeting, we had discussions about scheduling of drugs, and we're very restricted federally, and then how they're handled and played out in a criminal proceeding. We did find, like under Category A, because this discussion affected the guidelines as well as the policy in which we apply when people submit an application to us for waiting periods if required. So under Category A, you can see that we struck some language, and that is just to be consistent with the laws that have been passed. If it's a Class A, it's reduced to a Class B. We just wanted to make that consistent with the current law. Under Category B, again, we struck that, and we will go with the charges that are decided in criminal proceeding. Yeah. Any questions about just the change in the guidelines? The same arguments are going to be made for the policy changes as well. Yes.
Director, so was Senate Bill 46 considered with these changes? Does that affect this at all now that?
Here's your mind. 46.
Now that employees can use medical marijuana, have to have a medical card, have a stature's bill?
Yes. So if you, I'll just skip to that part. If you look on the second page that has attendance to post-sponsored basic training programs, go to page 3. So this is the table we will use when we determine whether somebody's eligible or accept their application. If you look at legal in the state of use, it's NA. Therefore, if they have a medical marijuana card in Utah, that would not mandate a waiting period for that.
Glasses, I can't read that.
Say it again.
For what? Medical marijuana?
Yeah. For federal restrictions.
That's right. It's still there because of the federal. No.
But this also concerns dispatchers that don't carry a firearm, so they don't fall under the federal.
Yeah, it's two tables.
Okay.
Sorry. All right.
And again, to be consistent with the guidelines, as you see in number one, we struck that language. Again, because Class A would be a Class A would be a Class B. Because of the restriction with federal scheduling, if somebody uses marijuana in a state where it's illegal, even though it's medically given out, it's still a violation of federal law and therefore required a year wait for law enforcement. And that's because of the letter that I presented to the group earlier. Any questions? I mean, you guys can read. Marcus, do you have anything to add? Dr. Checkitz?
This, the main thing, based on the subcommittee, I was just the scribe, so just wrote down the notes that the subcommittee had. The main thing was just dropping it down to what it would be equivalent to, so removing it out as essentially an aggravator from Category 8 and dropping it back down to a Category B because of JRI, where most of the drugs were dropped down from felonies to Class A's. The subcommittee felt that it would be better just to drop it down to be equivalent to those categories, and so that's why that language is removed. And Both the policy and the disciplinary guidelines match that.
Dr. Jenkins?
Well, that's essentially it. There was only a brief discussion. I think you mentioned about Adderall as a use, and we just elected to keep things consistent and go with the criminal charges as they would be identified. So there was just no consideration for that.
And also, that
if you look further down in chart details, the council approved these definitions for illegitimate use, recreational, emergency medical use. Those are still a part of the policy as we consider applications.
I think I followed it correctly. So Class A stands on its own. Class B with an enhancement of a drug violation is still different than what a Class B that didn't involve violence or drug use.
Correct.
Okay. Thought I got it correctly.
Do you need a motion for anything?
Yeah, we would need a motion.
I'd like a motion to. Because this is, even though the policy be decided by me, I do want consent from the council and support to change the policy, but the guidelines are, it's your document, so I need a vote. All right.
To accept the policy changes as identified by the subcommittee.
We have a motion from Dr. Checkitz to adopt the position of the subcommittee as seen in a document that you all have. We have a second. We have a second for John Crowley. Do we have any discussion? Hearing none, all of those in favor of the motion say aye.
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 Are there any opposed? The motion passes forever.
Thank you.
Criminal history and age of accountability discussion.
Yes. So this is actually going to be a big change to backgrounds and the information that law enforcement gets based upon our proposal and the statute. We were in the process of switching from Avoca to another software application program, and in the process we reviewed questions, and I think it was Mr. Yockey who was looking at the statute, and we had discussions about culpability. And when you look at the statute, 14 years of age and younger, or 14 and older, one is considered culpable criminally. Anything under that, not. But yet we ask, we put the word ever in the application. Have you ever done this? And so it really engenders decision making under 14 years of age. And I would like to make the proposal that we stop getting that information. I think there's, and lawyers chime in, but I think there's a liability when we're using that information to make hiring decisions and acceptance into academies, and if I use it as a formal process to create a disqualifier when they weren't mentally culpable. Oh, yes. Yeah, if there are nine, I should have Marcus present this, but there are nine. It doesn't matter how old you were. Do you have the list of the nine?
I can pull them up.
Yeah. One is a homicide, some pretty, offenses that are violent in nature would still be on the table for consideration by statute.
You got aggravated assault resulting in serious bodily injury, aggravated murder or attempted aggravated murder, murder or attempted murder, aggravated kidnapping, aggravated sexual assault, aggravated arson, aggravated burglary, aggravated robbery, or felony discharge of a firearm.
Pretty severe violations should still be considered when looking at a background.
Separated within the application for clarification for those nine.
Again, that's what spurred this debate within post discussion. But this changes everything statewide.
Are you looking for a motion on this as well, Director
Stevenson? Yep, just support that this is the right direction we're heading, and I anticipate sending out a letter, once the council supports this, send out a letter to every agency letting them know the new criteria for background investigations.
Go ahead.
We have a motion from Travis Knorr to support the recommendation of Director Stevenson regarding the age of responsibility on applications proposed. We have a second by Molina Stevens. Is there any discussion regarding that motion?
Just to make sure I understand then, when it comes to applications, the language would change, basically. So rather than saying, have you ever, would it say, beyond the age of 14, have you ever? Or what does this look like?
And then
you would have the list of the nine that they would be required to report regardless of age. Yep. Sure.
As to the issue, really, is there a certain case? I mean, as we get questioned about it, yes, it came up in post-council, and why? And so it came up within the agency, and so why? And are we trying to broaden the spectrum so that there's more applicants? Is it more fair to us, or what are we trying to really accomplish?
That
may be a byproduct of this decision, but really it was just us reevaluating the questions within the application because we were switching software programs. That was it. And you know, when you get attorneys in the room, they're going to argue stuff, and that's how this thing morphed into me standing before you asking for support to change the way we do backgrounds. And then we got into the liability issues of having that information, making subsequent decisions that impact their ability to work or whatnot. So,
at least some element of consistency in the statute as well, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
And you have any further questions?
I have a question, comment, not sure how to articulate it. I pause a bit to have the age at 14 because of the variety of culpability state to state, right? So I wonder if there's any variation there of applicants taken into consideration.
Did you mean that discussion?
Yeah, I believe most states are at the age of 14 as far as criminal culpability. So the reason this part of this came up was on our application it says, have you ever been convicted, involved, or arrested for a crime of blank? And because, so in theory, somebody could argue, well, no, I've never been arrested for a crime of blank because I was under the age of 14, so therefore I wasn't criminally culpable. So that's where it came up, and then we got into looking into a lot of juvenile law, which was enjoyable because it's so enjoyable to look up juvenile law, and came up with the nine. Where it's actually specified in statute that those are the most serious offenses that they consider. So I understand your concern about the age of 14, but in the majority of states, 14 is the criminal culpable age.
Does that answer your question?
It does, yes.
Anybody else?
Any further questions from the council? So I think we have a motion, and the motion is to support the recommendation of making those changes on the application form. All of those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed?
Aye. Thank you,
Mr. Stevenson.
Policy for interviewing recruits.
Yes. It has been our practice, when you send a person to the academy and there's a violation, we will, as part of the investigation, we would put them under Garrity and interview them. In practice, we let the departments know exactly what we're doing. We just want to make sure that we're consistent. So it wasn't in any form of policy. It was just kind of an unwritten policy that this proper courtesy, we let the sponsoring agency know. We had a situation where that did not occur in a thorough manner. It happened, but it wasn't exactly the way we had been practicing it. So what I'm doing is we're going to create a policy to make it very clear that this is the step-by-step process to notify you as the leader of that agency that we plan on conducting an investigation, and we'll actually defer to you if you want to interview them, put them under Garrity, or have or allow us to do that. In fact, we just had a case with an agency in here, and they deferred to us and said they would like us to conduct the investigation. So I just want to let the council know that that's going to be a formal process that'll be in policy. But I don't need a vote, but I just want to make you aware of that.
Any questions for Director Stevenson?
Point of clarification. So Garrity, we wouldn't be placing the cadets under Garrity unless they were certified.
To me,
it's obvious, but yes, that's the triggering mechanism of why we'd put somebody under Garrity.
Any further questions for Director Stevenson? Thank you, Director. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Next matter is to schedule our next meeting. You can stay up there, Director Stevenson, and talk about it.
Okay. We usually have one in June. And I cannot remember, but the latter part of June, there's a member of the council, and I can't remember who I spoke to. They weren't going to be here today. I can easily, by process of elimination, determine who did it, but the final 2 weeks were best for that individual to attend the meeting. How does the week of the 20th look? Is that too deep into summer?
I won't be able to be there, but if that works for
me. What about the week after? You're out?
No, I'm the week after works for me.
Okay, what about like the 29th, 30th?
29th
works.
Okay, 29th?
29th works.
10 o'clock at post?
Can we do 9 o'clock? Perhaps I have council meetings on Wednesdays. So if we do 9, I'd be able to.
That would be a first. 9 o'clock?
Sorry, everyone.
Get up early,
I know. I'm a pain sometimes, but I appreciate it.
I'm throwing it right off the game.
Jeez.
next meeting, June 29th at 9 a.m. At post. At post.
Not beautiful Santa Clara.
No, unfortunately not.
All right.
Beautiful Sandy.
All right. All right, with that, I will entertain a motion to adjourn. I have a motion from Colonel Ravitch to adjourn. Is there a second?
Second. I'll second.
Second from Sheriff Curtis. Any discussion regarding that motion? All of those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And with that, we are adjourned. Thank you all.